Can you be possessed? Can the devil inhabit your physical body, forcing you to do his will? Perhaps even the person sitting next to you is possessed. To find out, I strongly suggest a journey into the occult, into the house of exorcism. A new motion picture of such delicate and unusual subject matter that we cannot show scenes from the picture in this coming attraction announcement. In the house of exorcism, there lies a beautiful girl, her physical body bound in a state of helplessness, her spiritual body no longer her own. You've heard and read about it. Now see it. The motion picture of such demonic magnitude that all others pale by comparison. So get a good grip on your popcorn. And oh yes, do not come alone, because we cannot guarantee that you can stomach what you'll see. But we do know that you have never seen any motion picture like the House of Exorcism. And it is for this reason that we must issue this urgent warning. The management of this theater cannot be responsible for persons who faint or go berserk while viewing the House of Exorcism. It's coming to this theater soon. Admission is restricted, naturally. And remember, possession is 9/10 of the law.
So, little bitch, you like the look of the male anatomy.
Come on to the sickest show on earth.
See drug-crazed hippies.
See mountains of gore.
See the finest smut the world has to offer.
Hear two film nerds talk incessantly about it.
It's Something Weird This Way Comes.
With Mo.
And Rue.
Brought to you in stunning monophonic low fidelity.
Oh, God, this ain't the best centennial anybody ever had.
And here are your hosts, Mo
and Rue.
All right, so let's get down to business. Today we're talking about the adult version of Jekyll and Hyde. I love how clever they were. They spelled Hyde wrong.
Yeah, like they spelled it as in to hide.
Yeah, because that's what he does.
Yeah, and you know it's almost clever. So you know, awesome.
So the movie opens up with the doctor and Rene Bond doing it.
Yeah, and that was great. I got like thrust, pun intended, right into the movie. I was expecting it. You warned me, actually. That was nice of you.
Yeah.
And there it was. It got started right away. Although it's you know not what I expected at the same time, because as a modern person, I'm not used to that, let's say, style of this film. If that makes sense, was just kind of writhing kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, it's dirty.
It's dirty. The movie started off dirty, so. Chris, the doctor, and I believe that's the receptionist, right? Her name's Debbie?
Is it? I don't know. I in all my notes, I just wrote Rene Bond.
Rene, well, I know it was on your mind the entire time.
What, well, Rene Bond?
We'll call her Rene Bond and Debbie intermittently. We'll just go back and forth.
Sure.
So he's screwing the receptionist, and the phone rings, and it's the doctor's wife calling. We are led to believe she's basically Debbie, the receptionist. Rene Bond says that he's with a patient. Which is kind of a joke because she's kind of referring to herself too.
Miss Carson, sorry to keep you waiting. The doctor is working on a patient right now. Would you care to hold or call back? Don't worry, you can trust me. All right, goodbye.
So we get off on a nice foot there. That was great.
Yeah, we could say the doctor is in. Her vagina.
This podcast is going to be full of a bunch of those, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So he's banging his receptionist. She calls. She wants to surprise him for lunch. You know, and of course the best part is that, like, you know, is that Debbie, I guess.
Yeah.
Waits until, like, after they're done to tell him.
I try.
What does she want?
She said she was in the neighborhood. Wanted to know if you were free for lunch.
Mm-hmm.
She asked me not to tell you. She said she wanted it to be a surprise.
Mm, fine.
As a matter of fact, she should be here any minute.
What? Come on, get dressed, you sneaky little bitch.
She's like, oh, well, she's going to be here any second now.
And he gets sort of mad for a second there.
Yeah.
But yeah, an interesting way to start a movie. I can honestly say I can't remember ever starting off a movie that way.
Well, we'll watch other ones that start off with a sex scene, but yeah, this is definitely the first. Now, this movie actually has a lot in common with the last movie we watched, in that it's produced. The other one was directed by. This one was produced by B. Ron Elliott. You know, and he's the same guy who directed The Acid Eaters,
mm-hmm.
and this is also produced by David Friedman. You know, I didn't think about that when we had picked these. I didn't want to do two Friedman films back to back, but you know, this was a request, so why not?
Yeah, totally.
And then this one was directed by a man whose real name is Lee Raymond. But he directed it under the pseudonym L. Ray Mondi. Now, L. Ray Mondi has a couple of other really cool credits under his belt as well. He didn't do a lot. He only directed two movies. It was this one and a movie called Love Thy Neighbor and His Wife.
Oh. Maybe we could do that one later, too.
Yeah. And he was an actor in the classic She-Freak.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Now... this movie confused the hell out of me as to where it was actually supposed to take place,
mm-hmm.
you know, because the first couple of scenes, like after, like when his wife comes and they're walking through the town, it kind of looks like it's in the Old West.
Yeah, there was definitely something off. At first I was thinking like, okay, I'm sort of getting a 70s feel, but I think it was sort of the way he was dressed too.
Yeah.
So it gave me this feel like it was older than, like it was almost a period piece, but...
Mm-hmm.
But
I thought it was supposed to be a period piece because then, you know, because there's a scene later on where he's kind of in an alleyway and like that scene, like it looks like it's supposed to be like, you know, 1700s England.
Yeah.
You know, and then there are other scenes where it looks straight up 1970s and it's just so like off, you know, and I mean, and it's probably just a budget thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like they probably just couldn't afford to make it all. Like they like in this particular one, they probably had free access to like this set that happened to be an Old West set, so they just used it.
Yeah, and it was weird. Like the curio shop or relic shop, which is sort of the first after the sex scene is sort of the first major scene.
Yeah,
that's what gave me a cue that it was more of a modern time, or at least modern. For when the movie was shot.
Well, yeah, because why would they have an antique shop in the
exactly.
Old West?
And he's going through books, and the books, you know, I looked at it like, oh, that actually looks like books I would see in a used bookstore today. So,
yeah.
And since they're mostly populated with books from the 50s, 60s, and 70s, it kind of makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so time was really weird, and it was that they didn't really give you a cue as to why things were changing. When we get to it, I sort of have a theory about some of them, but for all we know, I'm being an academic who's making something that's not there. I did like the relic shop scene, though. The antique junk shop. I have this thing for junk shops, so, you know, when they're walking around, I'm sort of looking around trying to spot things.
Really? You have a thing for junk shops?
Shut up! But it was awesome. Like, I wanted to, like, I was just... It wasn't like antiquing. It was like, oh, I want to see if I can spot something where I'm like, oh my God, I remember that book or something. You know, like one of those like old kid, like golden books or something.
Yeah.
One thing I found kind of interesting is when you go to like curio shops or anything like that, you always see sort of brand name stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't see anything like that, which was neat. Like I started thinking back, you know, did they have Sesame Street back then? No wonder I didn't see like Big Bird or something.
It was almost like this
brandless time, right? So it was just like a bunch of junk.
Yeah.
But the focus was the books for this. So we actually had two books that were important. The wife, Cynthia, wanted a book, a Brothers Grimm book. I think she remembered it from her childhood, or...
Well, we should get out of the way. It's his fiancé.
His fiancé, yeah, that's true, yeah. That's true. And she wants to get this Brothers Grimm book, and he, while rifling through a bunch of other old books, behind the books, as often you find in old bookstores, he finds this other book that catches his interest.
Yeah, it's like an old journal.
Yeah. And he sort of looks at it and then puts it back where he found it. And then this is where we get sort of the first real bit of dialogue. Chris, or the doctor, goes up to his fiance. And this is where we find out that apparently Chris is a struggling doctor, which I guess is a problem of the 70s.
Really? Because I got it that he seemed like he was... rich.
I thought it was too, but there were these weird little signs I was getting. Cynthia referred to herself as filthy rich.
Oh.
And she referred to him, you know, in a really sweet wifey way, you know, you're a struggling doctor. And I was like, huh. So like, I just sort of filed that. And also she was really obsessed with this book. I think the doctor even said, you know, you and that book are inseparable.
Did you buy it?
What?
That Grimm thing. Did you buy it?
No.
I thought you and it were inseparable.
And the other great thing is about the old guy who runs the shop wanted to pay Cynthia $100 to screw him. So we got everybody's trying to get laid in this movie. It's great.
This is how the 70s worked. Everybody was fucking everybody else.
Yeah, at that point, I guess they leave. Head home. I'm trying to remember. All I remember is that later Chris returns to the relic shop, to the old sort of curio shop.
They head out because the doctor has to get back to work.
Mm.
And then later that night after his shift ends, he comes back and the store is closed. You know, the owner lets him in because he's banging on the door and he's desperate and basically, you know, he brings him in and they, you know, and decides after he's already let the doctor in that he doesn't want to sell him the book.
Yeah, and the doctor really wants the book. He uses the word must a lot. I thought it was funny. It's like,
So the doctor does what any other doctor, you know, anybody who's taken the Hippocratic Oath would do, and he murders him.
Of course.
My God, what have I done?
You know, strangles him right there and takes the book.
Because the easiest thing to do if you've never murdered somebody before, it's to strangle them in cold blood for a book. So
I can't lie when I say that when, like, as he was strangling the guy for the book, I was thinking to myself, you should take the Grimm's fairy tale book too. You know, just say you went back later on and you bought it, and that way she doesn't go back there. Nope, because that's how this whole thing happens. That's how the entire problem starts. Is she goes back the next day because she can't fucking help herself, you know? And she goes back and she wants to get the book, but there's a cop there, and he starts asking her questions, and you know, the best part here is when they say, oh, you know, there's like, oh, somebody strangled him. Oh, but it must have been a doctor.
Yeah. They're really specific about that. It's like CSI 70s.
Yeah, they look at the strangulation marks and they're like, oh, this was done with medical precision.
Medical precision.
You know, like doctors are known for strangling people. You know, so that's how he gets it in his idea that it gets it in his head that it's a doctor. And then everything kind of goes to hell from there. So, I mean, and literally everything just goes crazy from this point on. It's just, you know, trying
everything
to think
goes crazy, but both the doctor definitely starts going wonky. Now, prior to the police, when the wife interacts with the police, we sort of have a weird spot where Chris, the doctor, is reading the book. He gets back to his apartment, sort of reads through. That's where I got thrown off. It seemed like they were trying to be like 18th century.
Yeah, because he's wearing a top hat and a cape.
Yeah. And I couldn't figure out if they were trying to dramatize the journal using the doctor as Dr. Jekyll. or if there was something weird going on where he was, like, transferring himself into the book.
I have delved into the subject for some time now, and tonight the chemical components I have amassed and mixed into a draft. I shall intake upon myself as my own guinea pig. In this manner, I expect to free the other side, the hidden personality. The potion is by now beginning to take effect. And I feel a strange conflict within me, as though I believe the other side of personality is attempting to break loose and come to the surface of my being. I feel a great constricted sensation within myself, a battle of the senses. Faint. A vertigo.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know what the hell happened there. Like, because this is a scene that makes no sense.
Yeah,
whatsoever. Because it's actually in the next scene where he finally reads the book and gets the potion and makes it. So it's like he hasn't taken any potion, but all of a sudden he's this kind of like madman, you know. But I think you're right, though. I think he must have been just like fantasizing about it.
And we have a sort of a weird scene that involves, I guess, sort of like a hooker on the street.
I guess.
And she's got this really awful British accent.
Oh, it's the worst.
She, the only thing that's really British is she says pie instead of pay.
Mm.
But the rest is pretty much just normal speak. So she'll be like, you know, I'd like to pick you up. You'll just have to pie. It's like, whoa. It's sort of that fake.
It goes in and out, like,
yeah,
really bad.
Yeah, really badly.
That's all right, buddy-o. You're safe now.
What?
They've gone. You on the run?
Of course not.
Yeah, I'll bet.
If I were on the run, you'd be in danger right now.
What do you mean?
Well, then, if I were running, I'd probably kill you, just to keep from being given away.
I didn't give you away when they passed by, did I?
Why not?
Because I'm on your side.
Thank you very much, but no matter.
No matter?
I told you I'm not on the run, but thank you.
Which leads to, of course, another sex scene.
Would you like some fun?
Fun?
You look like a man of means, able to pie for your pleasures.
Do you think you'd be able to satisfy me?
Just try me.
Let's go.
Where?
I have a cozy little place.
This one,
particularly brutal.
Very brutal. It sort of starts off with
strip
sort of niceness, and he's being really creepy, because the guy has a really creepy face.
He is a surprisingly creepy dude, and what's even more so than that is that he somehow even manages to have, like, creepy genitalia.
Yeah.
You know, like,
enjoy looking at that.
We should mention this right off the bat. There is so much full frontal male nudity in this movie that, I mean, like, but it's, I can't be one to judge whether or not it's good looking or not, but all I know is that this dude's balls are all over the place.
Yes.
Like, you know, like, they hang so low that that if he shifts the wrong way, you know, they're behind him again.
Yeah.
And it's just like...
And that happened a lot.
A lot. Yeah. He'll be humping away, and the next thing you know, his balls are behind his legs. And it's just like, I don't want to see those.
Don't look at the ass. He was just a strange guy. There was a weird blend of just generally sort of creepy face. He has a 70s porn stash, of course, too.
He has a killer mustache.
Yes,
I gotta give him that.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But then his body, like, he's fairly fit. I guess I was not expecting him to be kind of fit, so he's kind of fit, but then everything was just weird everywhere else.
Yeah.
And he, in this scene, he chooses to whip her. I guess he binds her.
Yeah,
she sort of passes out. Is this a moment where she passes out, and he like fondles her while she's unconscious?
Yeah, it's really creepy.
Yeah,
but I love how they this was an old trick in the 70s. I think they probably still do it today, where you would like kind of like dip the whip into some fake blood.
Yeah,
so that way when you hit the person, it leaves like a nice like red, you know, splash against them. And, you know, and so they kind of went a little overboard. And so she was just covered, like all over one side, just completely covered in like fake blood, you know, slashes. And it was kind of a hard scene to watch. It was one of the harder scenes to watch.
Yeah.
And until, you know, until you get to the point where she's passed out and he starts feeling her up, and then it's like, okay, this is really super creepy now.
Yeah, it borders on, this is sort of, it borders on the Acid Eater's sort of daddy scene that we talked about previously, where I was like,
yeah.
Okay, this is starting to get a little difficult. And then I love when she wakes up. She doesn't scream. She's just been bound to a bed, and she's with this creepy guy who's just whipping her. Her face almost gives off this impression that she's saying, oh, yeah, you, yuck. Like, she just says this, like, look on her face. And then her English accent tries to come back, but it's kind of Irish. This time she gets pay right, but the rest of the accent is a lot more English, so it's like she had lessons between scenes.
Mm.
It was really weird. She has a great line. She says, you must be balmy to him. You must be balmy. Like, seriously, after all this just happened? And then this is when we actually get into the rape, which is great.
Shall we make love, my dear?
Let me go! You must be balmy.
Do you think that you could satisfy me?
Please, you don't have to pay. Just let me go.
But you promised to give me pleasure.
Please.
Just a little pleasure. As you promised.
Yeah, because I love her reaction when he's like, all you have to do, like, you can tell me to stop when you're satisfied.
Yeah.
You know? And she's like, really? That's it? That's all I got to do? And she's like, all right. So he humps her for a little bit. She's like, oh, I'm satisfied. You know?
There was even porn music for it, too. Like, up to that point, it was kind of period PC music.
Goes into full on softcore at this point. And so at this point, he takes the hot poker out of the fire.
Mm-hmm.
Walks over calmly and basically just shoves it up the twat.
Yes.
Man.
And that was not... I saw him put the poker in the fire.
Yeah. But
I never... Like, I thought, okay, this is going to be something creepy later. I didn't think they'd go that far.
Yeah, I thought he was just going to burn her with it, you know,
yeah.
And which would make sense. I was not expecting it to go up the twat, you know?
So, that was our little moment there. That was the second hot sex scene of the movie. This is, I believe, where we get to see they announce that they think it's a doctor. We're back at the relic shop.
Yeah.
There are cops walking around. And the fiancé comes back. Is that when the fiancé... No, the fiancé isn't there yet. They're just talking. The cops are just talking.
Yeah. Yeah, this was the part where I got all weird, where I got all confused, because it seemed like, you know what, I guess that last scene sort of makes sense if it was all in the realm of fantasy.
Yeah.
All right, so that actually does kind of make sense, but it still makes no sense that it seems like they're in the Old West, but these guys are like modern New York cops, you know?
Yeah.
But they talk about going to Vegas, and it's like, what, where is this supposed to take place?
It's kind of like they're like, had three or four different script ideas and just mushed them together to make a movie.
That's actually probably what happened, yeah. So she goes back for Grimm's Fairy Tales, and she doesn't even seem to notice it's a fucking crime scene.
Yeah, she's just wandering through aimlessly.
Walks in, and, oh, yeah, you know.
And there's a great sort of another dialogue, great dialogue between the cop and Cynthia, the fiancé.
Yeah.
That's sort of, again, like one of those weird conversations like we heard in Body Beneath or in Acid Eaters, where it's like this weird scripted back and forth.
Yeah.
He was here yesterday.
Did you know him?
Know him?
Well, what I mean is, are you a customer?
You certainly never seem to say what you mean, do you?
I don't know what you mean.
There you go again.
Really, Miss...
Carson.
Yeah, well, you see, the old gentleman that owned this store, he passed away. And I'm here trying to settle the estate for him. I'm his lawyer.
Oh, dear, I'm sorry.
Did you know him?
On the contrary. I never saw the man before in my life until yesterday. He had an old book that I wanted. Grimm Fairy Tales. Unfortunately, my fiancé, who hates extravagances, talked me out of it.
But you decided that you wanted it anyway.
That's why I'm here. Can I have it?
I'm sorry, but under the circumstances, nothing is for sale in the store.
That is, at least until the estate is settled.
Well, if I can't have it, I guess no one else can either, right?
That's right.
Oh, it's all right. I won't need it for about 4 years anyway.
I don't think I understand.
There you go again, Mr.
Russo, Jerry Russo.
I'll explain. I thought it would be nice to have for our children. Chris and I are getting married in 2 weeks. And even if we started to make babies right away, the book wouldn't be practical for at least 4 or 5 years. Now do you understand?
I think I do.
Good. Then it's all settled. If I give you my number, when the estate's all cleared up, you'll call me.
Perfect.
Oh, dear. I'll have a new address in a couple of weeks. I better give you Chris's office number. Now, you won't forget to call me, will you, Mr. Russo?
No, you can count on it.
Good. Thank you. It means a great deal to me. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Bye. Dr. Christopher Leder. Doctor?
Which was actually kind of fascinating to listen to, where she eventually finds out that she's just walked through a crime scene.
Yeah, yeah.
And she wants to take the book, but obviously it's in the crime scene, so she can't.
Yep. So this is how it all starts. He gives her his card, and then basically it's like he's kind of like on her for the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the curio shop, in the antique shop, there was like a wall of guns as well.
Uh-huh.
I'm not used to that. So it was kind of weird to see, like, I should have had pictured it as, like, a bookstore with curios around it, and then there was this wall of guns in the background.
Oh, I looked at it like a pawn shop.
Okay, I gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was almost a bit jarring for me. I'm like, why are there guns there? I never see guns. I'm in Canada. There aren't guns around here.
Hmm. Well, this is America.
Yeah.
There's guns everywhere. I'm holding a gun right now.
Oh, I figured. No,
totally. Yeah. I've got two shotguns, one in each hand. And, you know.
That's an amazing
one. And another one strapped over my back.
I'm just petting rabbits. I don't know. That's what we do in Canada.
Because that's my Second Amendment right as a bird. All right, so at this point we go back to the doctor and Renee Bond are back at it again, and the only thing I really noted on this scene was that her giggling was absolutely adorable.
Yeah, it was really playful.
Yeah, she's great. She really is. But he does one of these things that happens a lot in like 70s, you know, like softcore essentially. And let's not pull any, you know, let's not delude ourselves here. This is a softcore porn.
Yeah,
I mean,
totally.
It's not, you know, there's nothing, you know, like too redeeming about it. It's essentially just a softcore pornography.
Yeah.
And so, but they had this weird thing about nipples back then. Like, they wanted you to, you know, to do stuff around the nipple, but not ever actually take it out of the shot, you know? So, like, you'd have all these weird scenes of guys, like, groping around breasts, but not on the nipple. And in this particular scene, you know, he starts licking the side of her boob, you know? But it... And just like next to the nipple.
But you want to keep it in the shot. You don't want
to
cover
it. Yeah. Because you want to keep the nipple in the shot. Because that's what puts the asses in the seats, you know. Just love it. I love it. You know, and then we're treated to a shower scene. Unfortunately, it's his.
Yeah, you see a lot of him in this again.
More. My only notes on this is more cock shots.
More cock shots.
Like, I think the phrase cock shot appears way too many times in my notes.
Well, it's funny, most of mine are like these just weird statements, like, I noticed that when they were getting changed for the lovemaking, she pulls his pants off and change, like, falls out of his pockets, and they comment on it. It's like it falls out, and she's like, oh, it looks like change fell out of your pockets. He's like, ha, 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 yes. I'm like, okay, this is weird. Like, that kind of stuff just stands out to me. It was so weird.
Yeah.
And,
workout this morning just warmed me up, so you better not tease, because I'm in a raping mood.
Never fear. They screw in the bed, they screw in the shower. They basically screw while toweling off, practically. Didn't he have to run off? I believe when he entered the scene, he said he had time for a drink.
I don't know.
he found other time, I guess.
Yeah. But eventually he finds himself back in his apartment reading through the book,
yeah,
finally.
He's reading the book.
Yeah. And so he decides to make up the potion, which essentially looks like it's two parts grenadine, you know, a dash of vanilla extract, and some roughly ground dry ice.
Yeah. Precisely.
Yeah.
And they even called it something that sounded like grenadine.
Yeah.
My original note said grenadine, but when I watched it a second time, I realized it didn't say it. So it does look like he's just mixing a drink that's foggy.
Yeah.
And he's got the drink.
God, what a maniac.
He drinks the drink, and he starts kind of stumbling around, and he pulls open his shirt to reveal... But first, a word from our sponsors.
And now... Before the next show starts, let's enjoy an intermission. You'll find our snack bar chock full of good things to eat and drink. Tasty, tempting hot dogs, thirst-quenching soft drinks, fresh, crunchy popcorn, a complete assortment of delicious candy, and a full line of cigarettes. You've plenty of time, so visit the snack bar now. A tasty treat will double your enjoyment of the show. For your convenience, we shall keep you informed of the remaining intermission time.
You have 10 minutes till showtime.
The management of this drive-in theater is happy to announce you can enjoy your favorite form of movie entertainment regardless of rain. No longer will it be necessary to let rain spoil your fun. Now you can keep your windshield clear and dry with a drizzle guard. Simply attach it to your windshield, and in a jiffy, you're enjoying the movie without constantly running your windshield wipers. A drizzle guard will save you gasoline and wear and tear on your battery. After the show is over, all you do is take off your drizzle guard, roll it up, and it's ready to be used again, just like an umbrella. So next time it rains, don't sizzle in a drizzle. Get yourself a drizzle guard and enjoy the show. Drizzle guards are on sale now at the concession center.
You'll save money and time. You'll get the best of merchandise and service when you patronize these good neighbors. Shop with them regularly for friendly service and money-saving values.
My beer is Rhine Gold, the dry beer. East side, west side, and up, down, and down. Rhine Gold Extra Dry Beer is the beer of great renown. Friendly, freshening Rhine Gold, always happily dry. The clean, clear taste you want in beer is in Rhine Gold Extra Dry.
From Lexington to Madison and on both sides of Park,
they ask for Rhine Gold Extra Dry
before and after dark.
From Coney to Connecticut on Flatbush Avenue, from Jersey scenes way out to Queens, they sing as millions do. My beer is Rhine Gold, a dry beer. Friendly, freshening, and happily dry beer. Dry means clean and it's clear. Dry means thirst-quenching beer. Join the millions who buy Rhine Gold beer. Extra dry.
It's 7 minutes till showtime.
You gonna tell me about the rabbits again, George?
No, Barney. You know what we have to do today.
Yeah, I remember, George, but I can't drive no Volkswagen. I can't work no gear shift. I can't use no clutch pedal.
Barney, if I've told you once now, I've told you 100 times. This is the new thing Volkswagen has. It's called the automatic stick shift. There ain't no clutch pedal, and there ain't no problems.
I don't know, George. I just don't know.
Barney, you get in the car.
I get in the car.
You turn on the key.
I turn on the key.
You put it in drive.
I put it in drive.
And you drive away.
And I drive away.
That's it, Barney. It's as simple as ABC.
That's right, George. It's as simple as a...
Yes, you lucky people, just sit back for a moment, relax, and notice the delightfully clean, cool, and refreshing atmosphere of this scientifically air-conditioned theater. Great, isn't it? Remember, you can enjoy great motion picture entertainment all summer long in cool comfort at this theater.
Hurry, 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 folks. Get your crunchy, chewy, chocolatey candy bars now at the concession stand.
The show starts in 5 minutes.
G.I. Joe, G.I. Joe, fighting man from head to toe, on the land, on the sea, in the air.
G.I. Joe, attack! Boom, boom!
G.I. Joe, take Bill! Bam, bam!
Terrific battle!
Terrific equipment to have a battle with. When you get G.I. Joe and the authentic G.I. Joe equipment, you'll have the greatest realism, the greatest fun you ever had in playing soldier. Box after box of authentic uniforms and equipment, so you can change your G.I. Joe soldier into a camouflage Marine ready for battle, a Navy frogman with complete scuba suit and inflatable life raft, an Air Force pilot with high-altitude helmet and air vest. Get G.I. Joe and get G.I. Joe equipment so you can set up exciting battle action whenever you want. Remember, only G.I. Joe is G.I. Joe.
What is it?
Hey, why, it's Buttercup. Popcorn, add sweet butter to hot popcorn. Mix it up, wrap it up, Buttercup is born.
It's delicious.
So nutritious.
It's a taste delight.
It's so munchy.
Crisp and crunchy.
You'll enjoy each bite. Eat butter crunched Buttercup. Popcorn at its best.
Served in a king-size cup.
It beats all the rest.
Traveling down a dusty road, going to meet my friends. Heading for the movies, right around the bend. Looking for a good time, looking for what's real. Knowing that a good time is the thing that's real.
It's the real thing, Coke.
Intermission is the time, refreshments and my friends. Knowing all along, that's where it all begins. Looking for a good time, looking for what's real. Knowing that a good time,
what a good time,
is the thing that's real.
It's the thing that's real.
Especially when it's Coca-Cola.
It's the real thing.
Yes, Coke is the good time real thing.
It's the real thing.
To go.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Montgomery. Boy, every Christmas it's the same thing. Crowd, shopping, lugging the presents home. I love it. And I'm having the same problem this year I had last year and the year before. Deciding what to buy for my family and friends. Well, I've discovered something that helped me and just might help you this holiday season. This is the gift. A U.S. savings bond, guaranteed to please. And you know something? It's a successful present, never goes out of date. Here's a gift that truly keeps on giving, pays interest to make it grow every year. Even more than that, it's an investment in freedom. I might even give one to myself. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Christopher French. Minutes to go to the snack bar for a quick refresher before showtime. No crowds to buck, just go get it. You'll be sorry you missed your chance to enjoy some of the many tempting goodies waiting for you. Stretch your legs now while the stretching's good. There's still time to get a mouth-watering hot dog, a sparkling ice-cold soda, assorted flavors of ice cream, all kinds of candy, the most delicious steaming hot coffee you ever drank, and freshly popped popcorn piping hot. Make a beeline for the snack bar right now. Crispy hot fresh French fries.
Oh,
Hot Diggity Dog, Armor Franks. Ahoy there, mateys. Here's a new Hot Dog Diggity Party Kit. This time, a pirate party. As host, you get a real pirate hat and eye patch. And there's a treasure map and ring for you and every member of your crew. Follow the map to discover your own Armor Star Frank and a nifty pirate ring. Then everybody gather around and dig into those sizzly, juicy Armor Star Franks. Hot dog diggity, are they good? Armor Star Franks. Be the first to give a real pirate party. Send in this backboard plus 50 cents. This party book inside each package of Armor Franks has loads of party ideas and tells you just how to send for your pirate party kit. Hats, eye patch, 8 maps, and 8 rings. Ask Mom to get some Armor Star Franks tomorrow.
And now, on with the show.
Giant breast implants.
Which is great.
Yeah.
So the potion doesn't quite work the same as it does in the Jekyll and Hyde book.
Yeah. Well, no. Remember what it said? When he's reading the book, it says that the potion will turn you into the person you are on the inside.
Right. Oh, I completely forgot about that.
He turns into a woman.
So there you go. That's what he is on the inside. Which comes into play strangely later in the movie, but...
very, very odd.
For now, it's, I guess, just sort of an opportunity for him to fondle himself.
I gotta tell you, if I could drink a potion and turn into a woman, I wouldn't leave the house.
Which he doesn't either.
He really doesn't. Because at this point he's kind of on to the idea that they realize that he's the one who committed the murder before. Mm-hmm. So he decides that he's going to, you know, hide in plain sight as the woman.
Which is clever, and that's, I guess, where we get the Jekyll and Hyde.
Yes.
Title. So he's going to hide in plain sight. He can drink this potion, become a woman, and people won't realize it's him. Now, the first night he takes it, and I guess I think it lasted like 14 hours, and he kind of blacked out, passed out at least. And he missed a dinner or something like that. Regardless, his fiance is pissed off. And he actually says, I believe he says that he blacked out, that's his reasonable explanation for why he wasn't there.
Yeah.
I blacked out.
Hello.
Chris.
Hello, darling.
Don't call me darling. Where were you last night, Dr. Leader?
I don't know.
What?
Believe me, I blacked out when I was getting ready. And then...
Next thing I knew, it was morning.
And you didn't hear the telephone?
As I told you, I blacked out.
It sounds very strange to me. I think you should see a doctor. There'll be a messenger over to your office this morning with your ring. Our engagement is off.
Please,
dear. Try to understand.
Oh, Chris, you can't imagine how embarrassed I was. The excuses and the humiliation. Oh, God.
I'm a drunk.
And the engagement is off. She's really pissed off.
Yeah.
I love the scene because she's on the phone, sort of, I guess, a sort of a, some kind of level of hysteria. And while she's telling him the engagement's off, she's slowly hanging up the phone. And I love these scenes, like in old movies, when you have people talking and they're moving the phone away from their heads and moving towards hanging them up, but still talking as if they're on the phone. So she does that, which was great. And he's upset, so obviously he goes and reads the book again. And I think we end up sort of jumping back into...
I think we're back into the fantasy realm again. Because at first, I'd kind of forgotten what his fiance looked like. So I, for the first time this popped up, I thought this was his fiance.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, that's not his fiance. But yeah, but whoever this person is, they're sort of on the phone as well, and they and they hang up, and of course do what all women do every night and starts masturbating, because in the world of softcore porn, women masturbate 24/7.
She's doing it to a medical book too, or something like that, isn't she?
Yeah. It's like an anatomy book.
So, little bitch, you like the look of the male anatomy. You desire excitement by the look. Let's see how you cater. to the feel of it. Is it what you expected? Would you like more?
Because bisected views of flaccid penises are the hottest thing ever.
Don't judge, man. They totally are.
So he sneaks in and, of course, ties her up and rapes her. Mm-hmm. And then he starts beating her with what looks like a giant piece of, like, foam.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's supposed to be a piece of, like, concrete or something. I don't know. But it's really odd. I have a very hard time figuring out what it's supposed to be. But it looks like a giant, like, conical piece of foam.
Yeah.
Or like, and I think he rapes her with that, too.
God, what a maniac. But I'm no better. I killed for this book.
Yeah, he does. And it's sort of very similar to the first sort of fantasy scene. And another similarity between the two is that in both cases, there's a point where the ladies sound like they're enjoying it and
yeah.
are happy with his presence. I don't know. I guess it's in the fantasy world, so it's okay.
Well, this movie's kind of one step away from what they call a roughie, where, mm-hmm. you know, like nudie cuties, it's like voyeurism leads to sex, you know, and yeah. everything's very innocent. Nobody, you know, and like the guys who are watching never actually do any of the touching. But then when you get into the realm of the roughie, the violence leads to sex and mm-hmm. like sexual arousal. So yeah, you get it. You get into like the sadomasochism aspect of it, where there's a lot of whipping and you know, dirty stuff like that, and mm-hmm. and this gets very close to that, but I don't think Friedman had gone on to roughies yet by this point. Don't take my word on yeah. that one though. That he may have already done some by then,
but it wasn't his thing.
I mean, but at this point he's very much in the realm of the softcore pornography.
Yes, definitely. And then we after the fantasy ends, we fade out of that world. We have Chris and the receptionist again. This is where I think I got the idea that he's having trouble and that his wife is rich. It sounds kind of like they have plans to get his fiance's money. It seems like there's almost like a plot developing like that, like to become.
Well, there's
like
definitely a plot going on with, you know, with Rene Bond and the doctor, mm-hmm. without a doubt, yeah.
And they, at this point, they're kind of talking about that, and the cop that's the bane of his existence at this point comes to see Chris, and the receptionist sends him away.
Mm-hmm.
Now, after this, they kind of get back together. We have Chris and a receptionist, and you kind of expect there's going to be more coming. There's one line that, sorry to everybody who's into it, I know it's not a straight thing only, but the sort of, the come here and tell Mama what you did last night.
Look, come here and tell Mama what you did last night.
Line from the chick that you're having relations with, like your mistress, basically.
Uh-huh.
For some reason, it's really awkward to me. So, like, when she did that, she kind of sat on the bed. Was like, come here, tell Mama what you did last night. And this is like, oh. It's, like, it's the same thing, like, with daddy things. It's just like, oh, dear.
Yeah, it's creepy.
So, that was the situation we were coming to there. And I think, isn't this where... Or did he
this
already,
is this... This is the scene where he decides he's going to hide in plain yeah. sight as the woman. So he kind of, like, instructs Rene Bond to tell everybody that he's gone away.
Yeah.
And she doesn't know when he's coming back. And he comes back around as the woman who Rene Bond doesn't realize, doesn't know,
yeah.
you know, that it's him.
Where's Chris?
Obviously not here.
I know that. Look, it's none of my business, but just what connection do you have with Chris?
You're right. It is none of your business.
But I guess there's no harm in telling. Let's just say we're close friends. Very close.
I gathered that.
Chris has told me a lot about you. Come, sit down, Debbie.
I'd rather not, if you don't mind.
Oh, but I do. Come, we'll have a drink. You know, Chris particularly wanted us to get together. He speaks very highly of you.
I'll take a rain check.
This is where he like recharges into Mrs. Hyde.
Oh, and I kind of made the joke. Because he becomes the woman again, and of course he has to get changed, so he gets naked, and I'm like, well, there's some male nudity I could get behind. Yeah, of course he feels himself up for a little bit.
Does everybody in the 70s have fur sheets? Because there were like two beds that had like fur sheets. They were very fuzzy sheets. I thought that was kind of cool.
Well, you gotta have like shag everything.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, this at this point, I clued in while watching that this is like our second movie with lots of boobs and lots of cop interrogations. Because we had the same with the Beast That Killed Women.
Ah, yes.
Yes. So I was in good territory at this point. I knew what I was into at this point.
So the cop comes back and he's fooled by Ms. I've been calling her Ms. Hyde. Mm-hmm. But then when he leaves, something really interesting happens. Well, not interesting, but something happens and Ms. Hyde ends up essentially raping Brene Bond.
Yeah.
Now, let's have that little talk.
But of course, and Bond puts this amazingly awesome look of pure disgust on her face when Hyde is like taking off her panties, you know, just like she was always good at that. Like, I think that's why guys kind of liked her a lot in the 70s, you know, just because she does disgusted really well, you know, they'd want like to do like a violent like rape scene or something, or like a rape fantasy sort of thing, they'd always use her, mm-hmm. you know, because she'd put that disgusted look on her face, like she, oh, I hate it, but keep doing it, you know. And they have some really, really kind of awful lesbian sex.
Yeah.
Although Renee seems to be enjoying it at this point.
Well, that seems to be the standard, that at first it's really gross, and then near the end it's pretty cool. I guess this guy's really good, as male or female, so.
Well, you sure know how to talk.
Yes, that was a great line.
Ridiculous.
Now the cop, I believe this is where the cop sort of reveals to the doctor's fiance that they suspect him.
Yeah.
And she's sort of more in on what's going on now. She understands the cops are keeping an eye on him because they suspect him in the murder of the old man, which we forgot to bring up in the past, like, you know, 20 minutes. But yeah, the central plot seems to be that the cops are trying to investigate the murder, or the other plot is that they're...
Yeah, it's essentially a murder mystery.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you gotta love the cop's singular determination.
Mm-hmm.
How he lets it be known to Cynthia that, you know, that the doctor's the prime suspect, but, like, there's no other investigations, you know, investigating going on. Like he's already determined it was the doctor, and now he's going to find out.
Well, it has to be, because she came back and brought up the book. And, I mean, I guess nobody else shopped there yesterday. And it doesn't even really matter who shopped there. Like, somebody else could have broken into the into the curio shop. But he's definitely... they've got their sights on him.
Mm-hmm.
And after this, we have... This is where the movie goes haywire. This always seems to be at this sort of like three-quarter point that I find the movies we watch just go a bit bizarre. This is where we end up at the bar.
Mm-hmm.
So the doctor has transformed himself into a lovely lady again. And he's gone to a bar.
And of course, he does what any lovely lady would do at a bar, and he picks up a dirty sailor.
A dirty sailor. Now, keeping in mind, I guess, you know, we have to keep in mind he is a woman on the inside.
Yeah.
But this is basically a guy in woman's clothing.
It's no different. I mean, it's no different from him being like a post-op transsexual.
Yeah.
You know, he's essentially, you know, he's a chick with a dick, or a dude with tits, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
So he picks up this sailor and immediately just brings him into the back alley and fucks the dude. The thing I kind of liked about this scene, like this humping scene, is that there's this disgusting hobo, like just laying there, like covered in white rats for some reason, you know, and she humps the dude, and then there's this kind of like really disturbing scene where she's, you know, like they don't show it, but you can tell by like body movement that she's clearly like stroking his penis, you know, and whips out this knife and goes total Lorena Bobbitt on him and just chops the thing off. Mm-hmm. And the best part about that is that when she holds it up, it's clearly just like, it's just like a rubber dildo.
Yeah.
That one edge has been painted red, you know, to make it look like it's been cut off. I love that. So she castrates the guy, and I'm trying to think, what happens after that?
She ends up back home.
Yeah, it just cuts to the next scene.
She realizes, like, the next scene is basically her going, that she's sort of becoming immune to the properties of the potion.
That
it's running off faster.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when the cop comes in, and it looks like the doctor, as a woman, is now interacting with a cop.
Yeah.
He's going to, I guess, use his seduction powers.
His feminine wiles.
Yes, with the intention of stabbing him, because I guess that's sort of the Dr. Jekyll element, is that it's not just that he's turning into a woman, he's also kind of becoming a homicidal maniac.
I know. Maybe he's under the bed. Why didn't you look under here? Nope. Not there. How about up here? How come you didn't look up here? Maybe he's hiding up here.
And you are very funny.
Yeah.
So, to get the cop off his tail, he wants to seduce and kill the cop.
Makes sense.
The cop, I don't know, maybe sensing, maybe smelling a bit too much boot in the air or something, becomes uninterested, basically doesn't really care, and leaves. And then we have the scene with Mrs. Hyde.
With Cynthia.
With Cynthia.
Yeah.
And is this where she kills Cynthia?
No. She strangles her.
Strangles her.
And knocks her, and knocks her out, but doesn't kill her.
That's right. She's just not dead.
So Ms. Hyde starts fondling Cynthia because God knows this dude loves to feel chicks up while they're passed out.
Well, who doesn't?
Yeah. I know I do. I mean, I'm a dirty pervert, but. And then there's this great scene where, like, I love when they do, like ridiculous sort of, like, quote-unquote movie magic where, you know, where the hand is kind of, like, stops mid-breast and then, like, changes back into the dude.
Yeah. So he's molesting her, and we get this sort of, like, female-to-male transition.
Yeah, and we should also mention that this is the end of the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, there's, you know, it's, like, as far as storyline is concerned, there's not much going on in this. But the detective shows up at Cynthia's house. You know, he gets smashed on the head with a bottle.
Mm-hmm.
And here's sort of, like, the climax of the thing, you know, oh, we should say that the doctor took the potion again to become the woman again. So she's a woman now. The detective shows up. Hyde smashes him in the head with a bottle. Goes to kill Cynthia. The cop yells to stop him, so she charges the cop and winds up going headfirst out the window.
Yeah, a defenestration, which is great. Those are the best ways to end movies. So
absolutely,
she goes out the window, but he essentially ends up at the bottom of the ground.
Yeah,
and I guess she hits the ground, but she changes back.
Yeah, and it ends on the great line of, she said she knew where he was. And the cop goes, she knew where he was, all right. And it's just a, and it's just a cut. It's a cut to Jekyll's head, and the end.
In the end, we have sort of a fade to like red, sort of darkness, kind of a thing. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Deary me, this movie. What to say about it? It was an hour and a half long, too.
It was a little too long.
Yeah. It was strange because my notes are so finite. Like, there's not much here, but
there's not much to say about it.
Yeah.
Because there's not really much going on. I mean, most of this movie, it consists of people transforming between man and woman, and you know, and people being raped and murdered. I mean, that's the majority of this film. I mean, if to be honest with you, if Friedman had gone just a little less goofy and a little more menacing,
yeah,
like this would have been a roughie. This could have easily had been a roughie.
But there was a certain amount of goofy element. His reactions. I mean, I wouldn't say the acting was no worse than any other softcore that you'd see. He wasn't actually that bad. His dialogue was kind of. I got the feeling like he's had experience acting, if that makes any sense. When he delivered lines, he was kind of.
Sure.
He was pretty good. He sounded pretty honest when he delivered lines, so it didn't come across as like script reads for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much for a lot of the ladies, but he did a pretty good job. He had a very creepy face. He made some very creepy faces. I've snapped a few of them for Facebook. So if people want to see some screenshots from the movie, you can go to our Facebook and see them there. But yeah, most of the movie was just sort of creepy scenes followed by boobies, or often both at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I will say I was entertained. I was definitely entertained by the film.
It's fun. And it has Renee Bond in it, and that's never a bad thing. There is no IMDb page for this.
Really?
Yeah. I was going to see if I could find out who the actor was, who, like, if he had been in other things, the actor who played
Chris,
Jekyll.
The doctor.
Yeah. But there's no IMDb page, so guess not. Oh, well.
It should also be noted, I don't know if we might have mentioned this at the beginning, but the title of the movie is The Adult Version of Jekyll and Hyde, which I think is awesome.
They did that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's just amazing. Like, the title is awesome. And, like, I wish they did that kind of thing. Like, instead of Saving Ryan's Privates, it was, like, you know, the adult version of Saving Private Ryan or something like that. That would just be so funny. I was entertained by it, at least.
No, it's good. Yeah, there's not really much more to say about this one. Man, I think we wrapped this one up kind of quick.
Yeah. And highly recommended to those who like boobies. And I guess Jekyll and Hyde variations for sure.
Yeah, so let's do any shout outs if we have any this week.
Totally. Well, I guess we should do some quick rundowns of our Facebook Twitter stuff, or do we have like a little thing for it? Like a blurb for it?
You can say them.
Okay. I'll mention them anyways. We are on Facebook, facebook.com/somethingweirdpodcast, and we put up screenshots and chat between movies and keep you entertained, so that's a good place to go. I'm on Twitter at Potteroo, that's Potroo, and I believe you are on Twitter too.
At DrunkOnVHS.
Sweet. And I guess we should also do a shout out to the Second Unit Podcast guys.
Absolutely. We are proud members.
Proud members of the Second Unit Podcast. There's a website. I was trying to bring it up. Do you remember the exact website name?
What, for the Second Unit? It's 2upn.blogspot.com.
There you go. And, yeah, and also, obviously, Something Weird Video, where our movies come from.
And we did get a piece of mail. I forgot to mention this to you, but we did get a piece of listener mail, actually from the gentleman who put the request in for this movie.
Nice.
And it reads, Moen Rue, I should say the subject line is, you make my blood freak, which I thought was hilarious. It says, Moen Rue, been catching up on the show. I used to watch a ton of Something Weird DVDs, so it brings back a lot of great memories of often less than great movies. Regarding The Beast That Killed Women, you're much kinder to the film than I would be. Growing up in the internet porn generation, I just can't get into the old nudist camp or even nudie cutie stuff. I understand its historical importance, but I can get tits anywhere. The placidity that kept these movies from being rated gives them a quaint charm, but ultimately can't sustain my interest for more than a couple of minutes. You're absolutely right about Andy Milligan being one of the worst. I'd give that honor, quote-unquote, to Jerry Warren. At least Milligan was kind enough to ruin his own original material rather than cut up perfectly fine imports like Terror in the Midnight Sun / Invasion of the Animal People. That is true. He makes a great point. Jerry Warren is an absolutely horrible director, but I would give him second place.
Invasion of the Animal People sounds like something I should be watching.
Jerry Warren did this movie that I absolutely love called The Wild World of Batwoman. And you know, that's pretty much the only reason why I'll give him second place in this. But then he said, there's a great biography which relates the production of most of his films on how he hated everyone involved with them and everything in his life, particularly his family. No surprise to anyone who's seen any of his movies. Like the nudist movies, fascinating to discuss, but you couldn't pay me to watch most of his work, except The Body Beneath, which you guys make sound incredible. Look at that. My brain cannot compute. Want to see Andy Milligan. Talk functions shut down now. Aww. Keep up the good work. Look forward to future episodes.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah. And that is from Ed, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, Yerky Robbins. It's a hyphenated name. And he is from The LAist.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Nice. And that's crazy. So, like, I guess we're succeeding. We're making these movies sound good enough that people want to watch them, which I want to pass on some of the sort of, like, the enjoyment I get watching these movies as best I can. So people hear it and they're like, I want to see that now and hear it with that perspective.
Well, my goal with this one is exactly the opposite of my goal for No Budget Nightmares. No Budget Nightmares, I want to watch those movies so that nobody else has to watch them. You know, like, if you enjoy listening to me make a bad movie sound good, you know, watch me and Doug talk about No Budget Nightmares. But in this case, I want to make them sound good so that people will want to go watch them.
Yeah.
Because, like, these are kind of like, you know, these are kind of like must-watch movies, you know?
Totally agree.
And I'm not going to lie to you. We are going to watch some bad ones. And when we do watch the bad ones, I will be completely honest and say, look, this is a bad one. I'm going to warn you, you know? But we haven't watched any of the particularly bad ones yet. And it's just going to be a lot of fun, you know? We you know, and then our next episode where we're going to do Boanga Boanga is going to be absolutely incredible, because that movie is a load of fun.
It's really fun. I think we've had a lot of good movies, but I think it's the funnest we've had so far. So
I think so too. It's also the shortest we've had so far. It's only an hour long.
Yeah.
But
I bet you we'll be talking about it a bit longer than this one.
But on that note,
yes.
You know, if anybody wants to get in touch with us, like Ed here did, they can contact us at somethingweirdthiswaycomes@gmail.com. Obviously, they can reach us on our Facebook page or contact us on Twitter, whatever. We are always online.
We are. It's sad.
It is kind of sad.
You.
Huh?
But good for them. It's good for them.
I thought you were saying, especially you.
Especially you, Mo.
I am. I'm always online. All right. So let's put this baby to bed.
Yes.
And wish everybody a good night.
Good night, everyone.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to Something Weird This Way Comes. If you enjoyed anything you heard tonight, you can purchase all movies, intermission clips, or commercials directly from Something Weird at somethingweird.com. You can follow Something Weird on Twitter at SWVOnline. Let us know what you thought of tonight's episode, either on our Facebook page, facebook.com/somethingweirdpodcast, or email us at somethingweirdthiswaycomes@gmail.com. On behalf of that cuddly Canadian Rue, this is Mo. Good night, everybody.
God, this ain't the best centennial anybody ever had!
Brought to you in stunning monophonic low fidelity!
This podcast is a proud member of the Second Unit Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at 2upn.blogspot.com or on Facebook under the Second Unit Podcast Network. We've got
Drunk on VHS,
Film Reviews from the Basement,
The After Movie Diner,
The Cold Couch,
Something Weird This Way Comes with Rue and Mo,
and
The Dead End Drive. Thank you.
The Second Unit Podcast Network, bringing you the action and leaving the boring stuff to the other guys. Shit, look out! Zombies!
Song for you.
Come here and tell Mama what you did last night.